When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What's the most resilient parasite?
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Can build cities. Can transform the world. And rewrite all the rules.
That's what I'll be doing every single night.
Which is why...
No!
I have to steal it.
Talking about Willis.
This is Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
It's gonna work. It's passable, okay? This isn't terrible.
The best in local, regional, and national sports.
With no hidden agenda.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue on 1080 The Fan.
Welcome in. Let's fire it up once again. A holiday SOB edition of Prime Time. Schultze, Ortner, and myself, Ryan Buckley, here with you on this Thursday. A good one today for you as we have the head coach of the Oregon Ducks, Dan Lanning, joining us at 4 o'clock. Going to get a preview of, not a preview because we don't know who they're playing yet. We will get some insights about playoff preparations from him. Before we get into any of that, Will, how are you?
I'm doing great, dude. Excellent. I am. I'll tell you what. I try not to talk about my weight loss too much or like the gym. I probably talk about it a little bit more than I should. Today, I am 0.2 pounds away from hitting, being in the 220s for the first time since I was 16.
Well done. For the first time since you were 16?
16. I am starving myself today. I am going to make sure I hit that number because, already laid out, I know my drinking and eating schedule for the next 2 weeks. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to, on January 2nd, I'm going to be like 240 again, so I got to get it right now.
So what is the grand total at since your, I guess, peak playing weight or since you started trimming from 80, after playing?
85.
85 so, freaking pounds.
I was 315 pounds at like my pure fattest, and I am now 230 almost on the dot.
Outstanding.
So, hey, you know,
congrats.
Just,
man.
You know, it's one of those just eat a little bit less and just make different changes throughout the way. Like it started off with only drink on the weekends, and so there was 15 pounds. And now I'm a psychopath and I count my calories and my protein intake.
It's amazing how when you get into one of those modes, and as you can see, I clearly am not in one of those right now, but once you get on that path, how obsessive it can become. And I mean, I've done it before. I need to do it again, but it's amazing how easy it seems once you get the ball rolling. The positive momentum is something that's really can be captured if you stick to it early.
Well, I'm also in the perfect setting for it. Like, I don't have children. I can devote the time for it. It's not like if I waited, I wanted to make sure I got rid of the weight as soon as possible because I knew the longer I waited, the more it would stay and the more it would be harder to make that change. But I can tell you right now, like if I had other people like counting on me, aka the children, like you have two, there's no shot that I would have lost the weight. So I'm just lucky in the time frame that I had. And I'll tell you what, like if I can see 229 on the scale in the morning tomorrow, there's going to be extra celebration. So heck I yeah. will be like 240 by probably tomorrow night.
Let's go.
I love it.
I'm going to celebrate my weight loss with cake.
That reminds me of, so My brother was a pudgy kid growing up, and then he thinned out like right when he got to right before high school. So he was trying to make weight for and I'm sure that they can't call it this anymore, but the weight class in his peewee football, he was trying to make weight for midgets.
And, yes.
And I think the weight was, I want to say it was 150, and my brother started the summer at like 179. And any kid that dropped more than 20 pounds to make the team got to go to what was called the fat boy dinner. And you had to celebrate all the weight loss by just one gluttonous event at a steakhouse. And so my brother, you know, he dropped over 29 pounds to make this football team in eighth, or to, you know, make weight for this football team in eighth grade. And then he went out to Vic Stewart's steakhouse and ate so much that he puked. It was like,
dude, that rocks.
What a celebration.
Your brother rocks. I'll tell you right now, if you played CCYF in the Vancouver area, you know what I'm talking about. There were normal weight, like no nothing on your helmet. If you were too heavy to carry the ball, you were a one striper. And if you were too heavy to even be on the exterior of the line, so you had to be either a guard or a center, that was called a double striper. And every year, with like basically the last like 2 weeks before the weigh-ins would come for like the sixth grade team, seventh grade team, eighth grade team, and so on, I would fully go keto. Like, I didn't know it was keto at the time,
right?
But it was like dinner, you're having hamburgers, but instead there's like no buns. Mm-hmm. It's only the meat. And then the last day or two, I would completely starve myself, like to the point of I wouldn't eat minimum 24, sometimes 48, just so that the weight class would be like 174 and under can carry the ball. I'd hit 174 or 173.89, be like, yep, you can carry the ball. And then my mom and I would bolt over to the Dairy Queen in downtown Vancouver. I would eat like two blizzards, like three full meals. I'd be back over.
My baby's starving.
I'd be like 200 pounds, just fat, just huge, so gluttonous, so gross. There was no reason to do it, but I would do it every single year. And it's one of the funnier things to think about it. Well, that's the other part that's funny. Like, if you look at the rest of my family, they're all tiny. They're all skin and bones. Yes, none of them. I'm the only one that can put on any weight at all in my family. Like, my dad is like, I'm the heaviest I've ever been. How heavy are you? 175. Oh, sick. I remember third grade. Like, what are we doing here?
So I had an interesting thing happen when I got home last night. Usually my kid, my oldest kid, is in bed by the time I get home because of editing the podcast and stuff like that. But I made it home in time for his bedtime, and I helped him get up on the toilet. He's potty trained now. And he looks at my shirt, and if you guys remember, I was wearing a shirt yesterday that has a picture of Barry Bonds and Michael Jordan on it, both in baseball uniforms from spring training when Jordan was playing for the White Sox.
Okay, yeah.
And my son looks at me, he goes, Daddy, are those your friends?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, not really, buddy. Those are baseball players. And he stops and he thinks for a second, and he points at Barry Bonds and he goes, Daddy, is that you? Yeah. I said, Does that look like me? And he goes, yeah. And I said, sorry, buddy, that's not me. And he pauses for a second. He points at Michael Jordan. He goes, Daddy, is that you?
That's awesome.
No, buddy, that's not me. Does it look like me? Yeah.
It's
not me. Sorry, buddy. Those are baseball players named Barry and Michael. And he goes, oh.
Well,
are they your friends? Starts the cycle all over again.
Well, kids don't see race. So there you go. You might, in one version of a baseball game, MVP baseball, like 0405, you might resemble Barry Bonds in that game.
John Dowd.
Yes. The John Dowd white guy character, because Barry Bonds was not a member of the Major League Players Association, so he could not be included in any of those games.
Right.
So, yeah, they had some whitey playing in left field for Giants.
It was funny because...
And he mashed.
I mean, I remember when Michael Jordan was not part of the collective bargaining that would allow him to be an NBA jam. You either needed like a secret cheat code to be able to play with Jordan. Like, he was the best in the game, and you only got to choose like Pippen and Horace Grant if you wanted to be the Bulls, or maybe BJ Armstrong in there, Kukoc, but yes. Jordan was not in NBA jam. Same thing when you got to MLB baseball. And like you said, Schulte, I think it was early 2000s, maybe a little bit before that. Somewhere in that timeline, though, Barry Bonds was not part of it, but they couldn't leave the best player on the Giants off of the Giants roster, so they had to make a polar opposite but just as strong version. So they made, he was still the left fielder, he was still like the most powerful hitter in the league, but he was white and he was right-handed and he wore number 51 and his name was John Dowd.
And he had a buck that beard. Rocks. He literally had your beard.
Yeah, he did.
So, yes, in that world, yes, son, yes, daddy does just resemble like Barry Bonds.
Barry Bonds.
That rocks. Because like, I don't even really remember that time frame. I have a very brief remembrance of Barry Bonds, and in my head, every time he got up to the plate, he hit a home run. Like, that's what I think of Barry. Actually, he's probably the oldest player that I got to see in person. Now that him or Edgar Martinez, like, if I think about it, like, I remember getting to go to a San Francisco Giants game in whatever they used to call it, AT&T Park.
Yeah, it is now Oracle Park, although it's changed about six times over the years. So it was probably AT&T when you went, or maybe it was Pac Bell Park or something like that.
Because Barry was still playing, and I remember being, every time he came up, like, just jacked up to see him hit. He didn't have a hit in the game. I think he walked. But you know what I got to see him do? He stole a freaking base.
Yeah, he's in the... Now I'm going to have to look at this, and baseball fans are going to yell at me, but I'm pretty sure he's one of the only guys, if not the only, in the 500-500 club or 400-400 club.
I think it was 500.
The dude was a mad base stealer before he started getting all roided out with the Balco stuff. I mean, he was, when he was like an MVP caliber player in like 92-93, and he was super skinny, that dude was swiping tons of bases. And then he was kind of sneaky about it as he got older, too. It didn't really stop.
No, he didn't do it much, but I remember when he stole the base, and like, it kind of blowing my mind. I'll tell you what, though, like, all time, like, childhood memory, and this is gonna again show my youth, my dad waking me up to see the record breaking home run to break Hank Aaron's record. Like, that is a quintessential, like, core memory in my brain of, like, my dad coming in, like, pausing the TV, coming into my room, waking me up, making sure I got up, trying to go in and wake my brother up. Brother was like, not happening, dude. not dealing with this, not doing it. But then, like, going downstairs to watch him hit that home run and just being, like, in awe. Like, I remember in the prelude, too, they were playing the Nationals, and the pitcher who ended up throwing the ball that got hit out, so many people for so long had been like, I'm not going to be the guy on that trivia question.
Yeah, that guy actually, like, wanted to get the home run hit off of him.
He goes, like, I am going to go after him. And
part of it, I remember this really well. Part of it was that pitcher's dad faced Hank Aaron when Hank Aaron was sitting on 755 at the very end of his career. So he's like, well, my dad faced Hank when he was at 755. I'm not going to cop out against Barry for 756. And it was almost like a badge of honor that he got to link him and his dad in history, which is kind of interesting. I would have rather tried to strike him out than serve up a meatball, but who knows what he was trying to do.
That's what I would have done, too. I just remember, like, deepest part of the park, he mashes it, hands up immediately. He knew it. I'm actually getting a text in. My dad is correcting me. So I was there for Barry to steal 500 and 501.
There you go.
So he stole second, and then he stole third, and I did not know that.
Text line confirming he has 504 career stolen bags, so you saw two of the last four.
Yeah, that's right. That's how young I am. That's one of my first sports memories, is being there and getting to see Barry Bonds, and the whole time, like, even at that young of an age, knowing Barry's awesome. Every time he swings, it's a home run. I hope he touches the ball with his bat.
Well, Schultzy's got something exciting going on tonight. The Nutcracker, Schultzy, getting into the holiday spirit.
So excited. I bought these tickets like, what, 3 weeks, a month ago, just kind of looking forward to the
holiday
season.
Have you been before?
No, have never been. My wife has, and I'm not really a ballet guy, but obviously love Christmas. This is, what, an hour and a half show, so I don't have to sit there too long.
It's musical, dude. You love music. You love all things music,
and
so
it'll
be sweet.
I'm assuming all the colors and everybody wearing everything on stage is going to be beautiful. I'll be drinking, so it'll be grand.
Excellent. You love to see it. I'll be interested. I have a couple holiday-related questions for Dan Lanning today. We'll see if we get there. It's always interesting with him. You can tell pretty early on in interviews whether he wants to play ball or not and whether he wants to engage. And I've got lots of football stuff for him. I know that Will does, too. But I also have some holiday cheer loaded in the chamber for him to throw his way. I wonder if he is a holiday music guy, if he's a holiday movie guy, and what kind of holiday traditions the Lannings have going on.
I bet you he's a movie guy. I don't see him being... I think he's like me on the music. I don't see him being a big Christmas music guy.
That wouldn't surprise me. That would not surprise me, unless... I think if you grew up listening to it, like maybe if his parents were Christmas music people, maybe he is too, but we'll see. We'll have to find out.
Yeah, my parents are Chris. Well, my mom is at least. She's a Christmas music person, so I have rebelled. So I wouldn't be shocked if he rebelled as well.
Other things coming up on today's show, our college football camembert. We got to talk transfer portal. The Beavs land a big one, and so do the Ducks, literally. Alabama is crying. Are we finally siding with Clay Travis on something? And an interesting anecdote about Notre Dame's Riley Leonard. We'll have our NFL Niçoise, a Ducks battle in primetime tonight. And do we have a new worst owner in the NFL? There's a couple things coming out of New Jersey that are a little bit interesting. And our playoff poinsettia, or our poinsettia, if you prefer. We haven't gotten into the nitty-gritty of these first four college football playoff games. I know that you love to nerd out about college football, so I want to dive into all four matchups, get your thoughts on all of them, and by the end of the show, I want to have our picks for the college football playoff bracket. We'll also, of course, have in the news, spread some holiday cheer there. And things are going to get dicey in the club. We have to get back to the tis the season for fractured penises. That's something that
That's
we teased
right.
yesterday. Also, a new sport that could leave you sore in the wrong places. And I think the perfect Christmas present for Souk popped up on my timeline today. We'll share what that is with you coming up. But first, we need to get to the big news of the day for the Beavs. They've got a new quarterback, and we'll talk about it next. You're listening to an SOB edition of Primetime, 1080 The Fan.
All right, guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. And if you're betting college football bowl games, and that can be a dicey endeavor, we're the podcast for you. We're releasing breakdowns for every matchup with new episodes dropping almost every day. Subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Primetime. Isaac and Souk out until, well, Isaac will be back next Friday. Everybody will be out the 24th, 25th, and 26th, but the show will be back on the 27th with Isaac on it. Souk coming back, I believe, on the 30th. So those guys enjoying their holiday break. It's an SOB edition as Schulte, Ortner, and myself keep things rolling. The Beavs get a big one today. They land quarterback Malik Murphy, a transfer from Duke who was once a Texas quarterback, and kind of a coup for the Beavs right now because quarterback play for them, not consistent and frankly not good this last year. Malik Murphy can play a little bit.
Yeah, well, and the part that's surprising is the McCoy kid that they got was at Idaho. He was one of the top players at that FCS level, like, to the point where he was up for the Walter Payton Award, which is basically their version of the Heisman. It's a similar style. So it's clear that offensively, Oregon State is moving towards a athletic quarterback that they want to go and grab. They want to move away from the types like Gulbranson, which, no offense to Gulbranson, he's fine in the pocket and he can throw the ball well, but he's not going to use his legs. It's almost like Oregon State has finally come to the terms of you need to get a more athletic quarterback in that position. So that when things do break down, because in a lot of these games where you play better opponents, you're not going to have the O-line talent that matches with the D-line talent. So how do you get that savior? You get a quarterback that can add themselves into the run game. And you've seen how big of a deal that can be at the college level. I think this is a huge get, especially with all of the, I don't want to say negativity towards Trent Bray, but
sure.
Let's just say that that year didn't end the way Oregon State fans expected, and they're not happy. Now, to be fair to Bray and his staff, they had an unfathomable amount of injuries. Like right now, I think they're the only team that's ever had more injuries than the Detroit Lions. You had tight ends playing defensive end. So it wasn't entirely their fault,
yeah.
But to get Malik Murphy, that is a huge grab for the Beavs.
Well, and you know, I had seen him play. I did not realize the sheer size of this guy. You're not getting a jitterbug quarterback that's like
no,
dancing.
He's strong.
He's like Cam Newton sized. I'm reading he's 6'5", 230. Like that's a freaking horse in the backfield. That's a tight end lining up under center. And to think about the things that he's going to be able to do. And it wasn't like he necessarily needed greener pastures. I don't know why. Did Duke pick up a different?
Yes. So
who did they go get?
So Duke is going after the Tulane transfer. I'm reading this right here.
It's
on
Mensah, I think is his
CBS
name.
CBS Sports. Yeah. So they're going after Mensah. And Mensah had a good year this year, but Murphy had a better one. Murphy threw for just under 3,000 yards. He had multiple rushing scores. He threw for a school record 26 touchdowns. But more importantly, he understands how to play with inferior talent. No
yeah.
offense to Duke. They're not an ACC blue blood when it comes to football. They're a fine program. Manny Diaz is a fine coach. But you don't look at Duke and go, wow, that's a great Duke team. But all of a sudden, like this year, Duke was a quality win for some of those top tier ACC teams. They only had a couple losses, and frankly, they had no business losing to Miami. They should have beat Miami. And if they beat Miami, all of a sudden we're talking about them in a completely different light. We might be talking about them similar to how we talked about South Carolina at the end of the year, where, hey, they're not going to get in the playoffs, but it seems like they're growing. It's weird to me that they would want to move on from Murphy, because Murphy has shown that he can be successful in mop-up duty and in the couple starts that he got when Ewers was hurt at Texas. He's now shown when you give him a team for an entire year, he can be an above-average quarterback, and he can elevate those around him. That sounds like the perfect grab for Oregon State. So there's a question there of, how was Oregon State able to go and get him? Did they overreach? Are they paying him more through the NIL? Which, if they are, good.
The fact that they can get there, great.
Good.
Yeah.
This is a great victory for Oregon State.
I don't mean this to sound like a slight, but I'm like, what's the catch? Like, why this guy with the numbers he put up, with the wins that he's got as a starter, I think he's 11-3 as a starter in his career.
And you get 2 years of him.
Why is he not going to a Power Four school? Why is somebody else in the Big 12 or the Big 10 or the SEC not offering him that? Is there something we're missing about him?
Like, maybe, but at the same, I mean, look, Oregon State, you would have probably three more wins if your quarterback play was better.
Yes.
If you don't throw, five interceptions to Nevada, you win that football game. And again, you had a tight end playing defensive end in that game. You were out basically your entire starting defensive unit. So, to go in and make this grab, they also went in and grabbed the Bowers kid, the tight end. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, Trent Bray is starting to put together a pretty good group. And I wonder, too, and we talked about this yesterday with WSU, like, where do they go on their route to find their next head coach? Bray has made it pretty clear that he plans on staying at Oregon State, and he plans on staying there for a long time. It doesn't seem like there's going to be much Power Four interest to go out and get Trent Bray, because I think there's a lot of teams in the Power Four that look at Bray and say, well, he shouldn't be a head coach yet anyways. Yet Oregon State was willing to take that risk on him because of how well he'd done there as a defensive coordinator and because he'd obviously played. Does that factor into some of these recruits of going, hey, this coach is going to put me on a pedestal. I can be the big fish in the small pond at Oregon State. They're going to give me the keys, and they're going to take care of me.
Yeah.
But I also know that if I have to come back for a second year, Bray isn't going anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Bray is going to be here, and I don't have to worry about coaching changes. My OC might leave. My DC might leave. They might go and find greener pastures, but it feels like Bray's greenest pasture is the pasture that he's in right now at Oregon State. And so that might be a way of getting some of these recruits in who've been bouncing around a little bit.
Yeah.
I think if you read the tea leaves a little bit, we heard Trent Bray to end the season, you know, answering the question pretty bluntly on what they need to increase the program's viability. Cash money into our pockets, basically making the same calls that Kenny Dillingham has, but to no ears because nobody cares compared to Arizona State. That being said, the NIL money that they do have, you know, maybe it's what is it? Occam's razor, the most simple possibility or the most simple plan or whatever is always essentially the true one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they just offered him the most money. Maybe Oregon State prioritized giving a quarterback a couple million dollars and outbidding everybody else. If I'm Trent Bray and I'm saying, all right, how could I bring a guy in this offseason? It's simply put, we need to figure out what other schools are offering our targets, and we need to outbid them by $200,000, $300,000. And everything that Will just said, you have that extra year of cushion as a pillow to fall back on. You've got the coaching staff, or at least the head coach that's going to be there, so you've got a program that you can lean into a little bit. Mm-hmm. Those are attractive to a kid, and then you add more money to it. I think it's an easy sign on the dotted line for Murphy.
And then also up further north, the Washington State Cougars officially have seen John Mateer commit to Oklahoma. We talked a little bit yesterday. We're talking about Dickert leaving, the possibility even of Ben Arbuckle coming back to Pullman to coach that team. But Mateer now officially gone, and you were reading yesterday that his bag around $3 or $4 million.
Yeah, the guess is that it's going to be somewhere between $3 million to $3.5 million. The interesting thing for me is I don't think that that's a guaranteed starting spot for Mateer. Like, obviously he's going there.
Well, so Arnold's leaving, right?
Right.
But who else is in there?
The Haynes kid or Hankins kid.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The guy, he had a couple starts. They benched Jackson Arnold for him in the middle of the Tennessee game, and then he ended up playing in the Auburn game and a couple other games as well. He's still there. So Mateer being the outright starter right away, that's not guaranteed. Now, Mateer had a phenomenal year, right? But you're going to go up against in a quarterback competition. It's a younger kid. It's a more athletic kid. He's a blue chip prospect, where again, Mateer is not. Now, Mateer can always lean on the fact of, look at what I did. Mm-hmm. But to go in and automatically say, well, Mateer's the starter day one, I think that's a bit bold. Don't be shocked if all of a sudden we're looking next year and Mateer's in the portal again and people are talking about him. You know, hey, he went to a new spot. He got money. It was the right move at the right time. But he ran into a better prospect. And sometimes in a place like Oklahoma, you're going to have more cooks in the kitchen than just the coaching staff.
Right.
And so where do the boosters come in? Is there an upheaval of, we want to see this kid play? Because there is some belief the reason that we saw him play this last year is because of booster push for him to play over Arnold.
And I just wonder in general how complicating NIL is for depth chart issues. When you have someone who is making the bag and not playing well, and somebody in the team needs to move off of him for the kid that isn't, how odd is that? And I mean, I'm not sure how much we actually have been seeing it, but there's certainly, when you pay a kid $3 or $4 million, if he shows up and gets beat out, that's not going to sit well with the people who are paying the $3 and $4 million,
100%.
Which isn't really going to be the school. I mean, it's the collectives.
Right. Well, and that's the other, like, that's what we're going to have to fight through all of this as well. Yeah. Of while we're in this NIL era, you just kind of have to deal with who is going to be the starter and can you keep the boosters at bay or show them why this player should start over this one, right? Like, so the quarterback over at Oklahoma, his name was Michael Hawkins Jr.
Mm-hmm.
So he is a younger freshman. He was a big difference maker for them when they played Auburn. He struggles a little bit throwing the football, but where he makes up for it is in his athletic ability, his ability to run. Against Auburn, he had like a 50-yard touchdown, mm-hmm, where no one even touched him.
Yep.
And so if you can use Arbuckle to help him grow in that role, you would think with his speed, he would be able to jump a player like Mateer, where Mateer is going to be more of, he can throw a little bit, he can run a little bit. It feels like more of a consistent option.
Yeah.
Are you going to have the right boosters that are willing to give the money but sit back and trust the coaches? And at some schools, the coaching staffs have proven that, hey, no, we know where to play the right players. They're going to help us get a victory. I know that you committed that NIL to that player. We're going to de-recruit him. He will transfer out. He will leave. You will be able to save some of your money. Because remember,
right,
once you leave, that money goes away.
Right.
And I think that's kind of the argument that coaches are going to have with boosters. But this isn't a new problem. Boosters, especially at the big schools, they were finding ways to give people money or benefits. Yeah,
this
or
is
whatever.
This is not their first rodeo.
It's just out in the open and how you handle it. Like, the whole issue with Texas before Sark got there was, well, there's too many cooks in the kitchen and Strong and the old Houston coach who had gone over there, they weren't able to handle those boosters and keep them at bay. They had too much infighting, and that's why they weren't able to see more results on the field. Sark, he kind of watched how Nick Saban did it at Alabama, and then he comes in and he shows them, hey, we can win and we can put this player, like right now, Quinn Ewers, he needs to be our starter because Arch isn't there yet, but Arch will be there soon. And you know that type of upswell from fans and especially from boosters who are paying NIL deals to Arch, it's getting louder and louder by the day.
Well, we have some more transfer portal news. This affects the Ducks. The rich get richer, but they also lose one as well. Details coming up next. You're listening to Primetime. Here's Schultz. Welcome back to Primetime, an SOB edition. It is the most wonderful time of the year, and especially if you're getting a new quarterback like Oregon State.
That's right.
Malik Murphy signing on with the Beavs. Exciting stuff for them.
It's got to be encouraging, right?
Absolutely. I mean, it was kind of a discouraging season the way things ultimately wrapped up. I think it didn't have a lot of reliable quarterback play, and it's hard to know whether you would start the offseason trending in the right or wrong direction, and this is a great step in the right direction. I mean, you shore up the most important position on the field with a guy who is a proven winner. It's really great.
I think if you're a WSU fan, obviously, everyone is hurting that is a Coug fan right now. I have a bunch of buddies who have been using their Twitter accounts to go after Jake Dickert on his little picture. Have you seen that? Where it's like him and his entire family.
Oh, in the
and
private
they're on,
jet.
Yeah, they're on the private jet. Like, we're going to see you soon, Demon Deacons. And yeah, It makes me laugh. I don't think it makes anyone else laugh watching their tweets about it. But if you are a WSU fan, you have to be encouraged because there's this doom and gloom of the sky is falling. We'll never get another good transfer. Oregon State is in the same boat as you. Like, going to Corvallis is basically the same as going to Pullman, I think. And so to see Oregon State be able to use the transfer portal and go and get two big pieces, specifically Murphy in that quarterback spot, but also Bowers at the tight end spot, I think that has to be encouraging that if you get the right guy and the right coaching staff in there, it isn't all lost. You can still have those special seasons that you wanted. You can still get some of the higher end talent if they're looking for a change of scenery. You just have to be willing to probably overspend a little bit in the NIL, and you have to hope that you get the right staff that can recruit at that level, but also get those transfer players to buy into the fact of they are going to put me in a spot where I can improve more than any other college that I could have gone to.
Also, too, it's just at the perfect time, right as it seems like both programs are hitting rock bottom. You get 24 hours later, just this resurgence of faith. And
absolutely.
And just, you know what? Like, yeah, I love my Ducks and I'm excited, you know, for them in the CFP, but like, I want everybody around here to succeed. And I think this is just going to be awesome to watch.
Yeah, I think in general, Duck fans, I mean, I don't want to speak for all of them. I think in general, Duck fans don't want to see Beavers just fall by the wayside. I think they want to see them remain competitive, remain relevant, and it's a tough time to be doing that considering the way you kind of got hosed in realignment. Not kind of, you did. Mm-hmm. And but this is a huge coup for them. Two things happened for the Ducks today or over the last 24 hours in recruiting, both of them really big, one of them good, one of them bad. Where do you want to start?
Let's start with the bad, because I guess I don't understand why this is allowed to happen.
And you know what? It's good that you asked that question, because Andrew Nemec will be in for recruiting with Andrew Nemec tonight, and he will have more information on this. But Ducks five-star wide receiver commit Dallas Wilson has asked for his way out of his letter of intent. Now, we just had the National Signing Day on the 3rd.
He just signed.
Oh, God. Apparently, there were reports he was thinking about flipping to Florida in the final hours just before signing day, but he was the Ducks' longest tenured commit. He was like the first commitment to that class like a year ago, and he's the, depending on where you look, he's either the second or third best wide receiver in the class. He's a top 20 player in the country, and apparently, it sounds like he's likely to land at Florida. I'm guessing it has something to do with money, but he was a Duck for all this time. He actually signs on the dotted line. And then today reports out that he wants to get out of his national letter of intent.
Well, and that's my question there, because when I signed, which wasn't that long ago, you didn't get out of it. Now, I also understand that when I signed, again, less than 10 years ago, the transfer portal wasn't even a thing.
Well, yet. But just on the surface, when you sign the paper, you're signing a binding contract.
That's not, what like, I would have thought for a year. That was my understanding.
And
it
granted,
is a year of a binding contract. But he's also not the first person to do this.
And also, I would imagine if you have a kid who signed on the dotted line and 2 weeks later has remorse and doesn't want to be there, there are a lot of coaches that are going to be like, you have to stay. We want you even though you don't want us. Like, that's unlikely. It's an odd situation and circumstance.
Well, the other thing, too, is he is a Florida boy. Like, he is from Florida.
Why commit to Oregon in the first place?
Dude, 18-year-old, 17-year-old, I don't know how old he is. This stuff happens all the time.
Okay, but we allow the system for them to do it in, and that's where I have an issue. The whole committing before you actually, like, are allowed to decommit and then commit to other schools.
Because that's the thing. No one forced him to sign on the 3rd.
That's where
just,
I feel
just
like...
wait if you don't know.
This is a major issue with the system that we allow these kids to, like... You're 18. You're going to change your mind. Let's make it so, like, you actually have to stick to something. Come on.
Here's the thing, because you don't make the coaches stick to everything. Because if we're going to say, hey, you sign an NIL, you're there for 3 years. Well, then guess what? The coach has to sign that contract, too, and then the coach has to stay there, or else it's hypocritical, right? And the coaches are never going to agree to that. I was just under the impression that if you signed... like, once you signed on the dotted line, you had to go. The verbal stuff, it's why I don't pay any attention
to
recruiting when it's like, Look at the Ducks just got a verbal commitment.
Now the ink is dry, though, so it's got to be different.
And that's where I'm going to have an issue with it. I do think that it should be different. That being said, if I'm Dan Lanning and I'm an Oregon coach,
you move on.
Dallas, go away. Go to where you want to be. If you want to be in Florida, go to Florida. It's hard to ask an 18-year-old because I know that with the transfer portal now, you can leave every year or whatever the rule is. But essentially, the way that those kids look at it, because they think it's always going to be the best case scenario, they're going to come in, they're going to start right away, they are going to be one of the best players, because that's how those kids think. They think that it is a 4-year commitment, and that's scary. That is a big, big deal. And when you're that big of a player, I guarantee you he's got people in his family and his friends that are pulling on him and pulling on his heartstrings and asking him, why are you going to Oregon? Now I'll never get to see you play. You need to go to Florida. Let's build something special in our home state. Think about it. Oregon has never won a national title. Florida has, and they've done it under multiple coaches. And so you're going to have
done it in his lifetime.
Right, and you're going to have all these people pulling on different strings at different points. And so I understand at 18 how that can be so difficult and how you might make a decision of, hey, I want to do this, and then, no, I don't actually want to do this. I want to go to a different spot in something that is such a big deal. It still feels like if you're going to sign a national letter of intent, there should be a, I don't know if a contract is the right word, but an understanding of like you have to spend the year there. And maybe when Andrew Nemec comes on, he'll have a better explanation and it will put me more at ease. But I just know that that's what it once used to be.
Right.
That being said, dude, all the power to Dallas Wilson. I hope that he goes to Florida and he has the type of career that he wants. I remember how I was at 18. I think I thought I was going to marry 3 different girls through a 3 different month span.
But you didn't have to sign on the dotted line to do so.
I tried to.
that was a bad idea.
I might have tried to. Well, and maybe this was a bad idea for him. We don't know, right? So I'm not shocked that an 18-year-old after a couple weeks wants to change. It's one of the long lists here in college football that has to change. How do you do that? It's going to take time, and no one's going to make a change until April when the house settlement finally comes
through. Well, words don't matter already in this world of commitments and whatnot, essentially, and recruiting. So now what you're getting to, signing on the dotted line, doesn't mean anything either, which I get it. You don't want a kid there. It reminds me, actually, we'll name an adult that's done this, Billy Donovan. He jumped from college to the NBA at one point. Remember, was hired by the Orlando Magic after coaching Florida to several championships, or I think 2 in a row at the NCAA level. What, a week after the opening presser?
Psych!
Yeah, he's like, no, I think I made the wrong move too early. I want to go back to Florida. Eventually became a coach in the NBA with the Thunder. But like, I understand that people change their minds, but there was a bit of a penalty for Billy Donovan after signing on the dotted line. He couldn't coach in the NBA for, I think it was 5 seasons. There was an agreement that he was not to, basically a non-compete, you know, screw over the Orlando Magic. And these kids, I understand coaches get so many situations where they can do the same thing, but let's try to build a system of commitment and not screwing each other over in this society. Please, I know I'm going Costanza, but damn, this just pisses me off.
Well, don't be pissed off for too long, because the Ducks did get massive news, both right, literally and figuratively, to the positive out of the transfer portal. We will get to that along with the Dan Lanning pregame show coming up next. Primetime, 1080 The Fan. Welcome back to Primetime and SOB Edition. This is the Dan Lanning pregame show. Coach going to be chatting with us in about 11 minutes. Have plenty to talk to him about. But if you have questions for Coach Lanning, let us know on the fan text line, 503-864-6326. We're just finishing up some transfer portal news. And Will, you made a distinction during the break that the national letter of intent, the NLI, so to speak, mm-hmm, is a little bit different than we were used to before.
Well, because so when I had to sign, you signed a national letter of intent, which basically locked you into that school for, I believe, a year. Mm-hmm. And then every year you would re-up and you would sign. And that would include like your scholarship information and you know, all that kind of good stuff that I definitely read with a fine tooth comb and didn't just sign every year. Right. Now it looks like, as they've moved into the NIL era, it's more of a financial aid agreement. So it's a lot less binding, according to the brief blurb that I read, because I did not understand the sports lawyery talk on the On3 article that I was reading. So it allows a little more freedom of movement, like what you're seeing right now with Dallas Wilson. And I get it. I guess, but it's just, it's another thing on a long list that needs to change with college football.
Well, now for the good news for Ducks fans. You picked up a massive human being in the transfer portal. The number one tackle in the transfer portal, 6'8", 309-pound Isaiah World. As big as the world. He's a three-year starter at Nevada. Started all 35 games, and this last year did not miss a snap. Played all 852, and he's the highest-ranked offensive lineman in the transfer portal, and the Ducks pick him up, and it's excellent timing for them because Johnny Cornelius is a senior, and Josh Connerly, a junior, may have the NFL calling for him. So you've at least got one spot for this guy. Maybe you have it's the left tackle spot. Hard to know for now, but this is I don't think there's necessarily enough credit given when you get one of these types of pieces that you can just road grade your opponents with. And I've yet to see him play, but based on what the reviews are, the analysis is, this is an absolute win for the Ducks.
No, 100%. I mean, if you can go out and build your offensive line to the level that Oregon has, it's why they have the success that they've had the last couple of years. You have one of the better offensive lines in the entire country. And so if you can go and get someone, and look, no offense to Nevada, but who's been playing in a smaller conference, kind of like a AAA system, you can go and let them develop him, grab him, put him into your system, trust that your offensive line coach and other players can put him in the right position. And now all of a sudden you go from, hey, we might be losing both of our tackles. Do we have a freshman or a sophomore who's been in the system a year or two that we think is ready for this? You can now make that move with that transfer player world in this issue where it becomes a tougher competition. And when you have a tougher competition, it builds greater depth. Now, the starter might not be an improvement. We don't know if World will be better than Connerly or Cornelius. That's really difficult for him to do. But it makes you stronger from a depth perspective if you lost someone went down with an injury, which you saw in this offensive line, and how important your depth was at the beginning.
Someone bringing up on the fan text line, I hope this isn't true, but it could certainly explain things. Someone read this morning that Dallas Wilson's mom passed away, and he wants to be closer to home because of that. So,
which would totally make sense.
These are the kind of things that we never necessarily know, and it, you know, that would be that'd be a shame, but obviously the exact kind of situation where you would want to cancel out that national letter of intent and just say, yeah, dude, go where you need to be.
Well, and here's the thing. The Ducks are going to let him out.
Of course.
They're not going to hold – in this day and age, you can't hold him to his – whatever he signed, because if you tried to, the next recruit wouldn't come in. You know what I mean? It's one of those where you have to almost, I don't want to say you have to give in to the 18-year-olds,
mm-hmm.
or but it's a bad look.
You can't say no to transferring. There's a reason why when transfers transfer out of Arizona State, Kenny Dillingham talks them up on Twitter.
Right.
There's a reason why he helps try and find them that new spot. It's the new age of college football. You can't be Nick Saban anymore and be like, you want to transfer out of here? Good luck. I'm denying you every SEC team.
Right.
I'm denying you to go back to your hometown. So you're going to, like, you're from the Northeast. I'm going to make you play in the Pac-12. That kind of stuff doesn't fly anymore because the other recruits will look at that and be like, I'm not going to play for that.
Well, and if his mom passed away, I take back everything I said. Okay.
Of course. I
do not apply that to that situation whatsoever. Do not blast me, please.
Dan Landon coming up next. The text line telling us we should ask him again about Dylan Gabriel playing defense. I don't think we'll do that today. You mentioned that Rop was concerned for you the first time that you were going to interview Dan Landon.
Rop has made it clear that he is terrified when I talk to others. I wonder if he gets a little bit of that, like, pucker factor when, like, a middle schooler gets ready to go and talk to someone. It's like your kid, like, oh, well, there's Ortner. He's going to go mess this up for us. He's going to say something stupid. He's going to ask Landon what's his favorite type of beer.
I mean, you can do that next. We
I'm not going to do
we
that.
We recently found out that his favorite type of liquor is mezcal. So, I mean, these questions are all in play.
What?
Yeah.
Mezcal?
He said recently. I don't know if it's like the favorite of all time, but
don't worry, Rop. I won't ask him if he slaps the bag. I gotcha.
I might ask him about eggnog. We'll see what we have time for. We'll get into the football stuff first, but the coach is coming up next on the other side of the break. Dan Landon coming up next, primetime, an SOB edition here on 1080 The Fan.